Today's program was brought to you by Le Creuset, made in France since 1925. The first and finest enameled cast iron cookware and a favorite for generations. For more information, visit lecreuset.com. That's LECREUSET.com.
I'm HRN's Executive Director, Katie Mosman Wadler, with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. This week, we're looking at the way labels shape our perspectives on food.
I know you're not supposed to judge a book by its cover, but is it acceptable to judge a wine by its label?
There are some labels that I'd say are so bad they're good.
As long as your paperwork's in good shape, you'll get a grass-fed label.
Tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network. That's Meat plus sign THREE. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, hello, hello. You are listening to Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Amanda Dell.
I'm Kimberly Chow.
We are the co-directors of Food Book Fair, a food media festival, and we are your co-hosts for this ride of Recommended Reading, our weekly show where we explore not only what we're reading, watching, and listening to and what we want to recommend, but we get to collaborate and hear what our favorite friends and family are doing, what they have on their nightstand, and what their projects are coming up.
We're really thrilled to be on the show and in the booth this week with Sana Javeri Kadri. She is the founder of Diaspora Co., which is an incredible direct trade heirloom, single varietal turmeric importer. They do a lot of other cool stuff too. She will be talking about her new zine, Cooking with Gold, new products on the come up, and we'll also be talking about all the things that we love in common. She's also a talented photographer, a great recommender, among many other things.
She's a super recommender, so it's really exciting to have her on the show today. Speaking of recommending, we are going to kick it off and tell you about what to bookmark, save, share, borrow, buy, all that good stuff. Usually Kim and I discuss who's going to go first, but we didn't today. What are you feeling, Kim?
What am I feeling? I have started reading beyond all of... Happy Election Day, yes. Guys, by the way. Hope everyone is out there voting. I hope you brought a book where you are waiting in line, because I hear it's taking a little while. It took me about an hour this morning.
Really?
But thanks, everyone, for getting out there. Those who can vote. And who are doing it, thank you.
Yeah, and thank you to everyone who's working the voting polls today. That is a tough job. Side note, my grandmother always used to do it. And it's really hard to look up everyone in that huge book. So
yes,
thank you for doing that and coming out and helping to facilitate easy voting for everyone.
Yeah, today in line, I was on Instagram, but beyond that, I also had a copy of If Beale Street Could Talk by James Baldwin, which I can't determine whether it was a gift from someone or something, a subletter left, but both people I'm thinking of love James Baldwin. I love James Baldwin too. This was just adapted into a film directed by Barry Jenkins, and I can't wait to see it. And so I just started the book, and it's really good.
Okay,
it's about two young people in love.
And it takes place...
And there are twists.
In Harlem.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so that's your... Did you get far in the election line?
No, I did not get that far.
Okay.
But I was... I can't tell you the proportion of reading to Instagram. It's not,
you were
not good. I did
you
also...
You were toggling between each.
I did also listen a couple times to... I listened to Sicko Mode, Travis Scott, a couple times in line, and also Shallow from the Star is Born soundtrack, which I have not seen the movie. I don't really feel either way about Bradley Cooper or Lady Gaga, but I saw a meme where it was a cat like yelling, and it's a cat that looks like it's yelling, and it has the lyrics of the chorus, and I'm on the deep end. Watch as I dive in. I'll never hit the ground. And this picture combined with like a fluffy cat yelling it, hollering. brought me endless joy. And I was like, who can I talk to that's actually seen this film? This is funny to me, even though this doesn't relate to my life. So I listened to Lady Gaga and I listened to Travis Scott and I voted.
Cool. I feel like I'm missing a lot by not being so up on the memes these days, but when I have a few minutes that are free, I'll definitely...
It's because I started following all these astrology accounts and it's just memes. And then I was trying to make an Arthur meme.
Wait, I made one.
Wow. But it involved Googling to get the right images, and then it was just all sorts of shit is on the internet. Some stuff kind of weird.
Yeah. I feel like my recommend is pretty mainstream compared to these memes.
What is
memes.
It?
Many of our guests have spoken about this, but I really have a big heartfelt recommendation for it today, which is The Daily, the daily podcast from the New York Times, hosted by Marco Barbaro. And, this is getting a little personal. I don't normally do this, but if I'm going to like take a shower, do a deep conditioning, I like listening to a podcast in the shower. And so I kind of have a whole setup that I do, and like 20 minutes for The Daily is like perfect. So I wanted to treat myself to an episode today, and they actually, couldn't be happier. I figured it would be about the election today. If you're listening live, is election day. And it's called, the title of today's episode was called A Field Guide to Today's Elections. If you are not familiar with The Daily, it's kind of like a 20-minute mini podcast focusing on one issue or one current event. And sometimes there are guests. Sometimes they play past, you know, footage or audio from whatever they're talking about to kind of round out the episode. So I think we can all agree there's been an incredible amount of media about the election. So I think what I was looking forward to was kind of the focus in that The Daily provides.
Voting guides, surprisingly hard to find on the internet.
Like where to vote?
No, voting guides as to how to vote on different propositions. I was like inputting all these different Google search terms. Huh. Unless I'm bad at searching, which I'm not.
So the episode was focused on four major issues: immigration, the Supreme Court, guns, and healthcare, and how they're shaping voters' choices. So they had a special guest, Alexander Burns, who covers national politics for the New York Times. So they kind of went through one by one by one these four topics: immigration, Supreme Court, guns, and healthcare. And I think what was really, for me, interesting about this episode and what I was hoping it would do would be, a lot of times I feel like I live in a very liberal New York bubble, and it's very hard for me to understand and empathize with other voters and other points of view on these really polarizing issues. So I felt like what this episode did really effectively was replay candidates in states, you know, that are definitely kind of more in the middle of the road that kind of have both Democrats and Republicans. And it played actual like campaign footage from the different sides of the, you know, candidates from different sides. And it really made you understand how the voters in those states are looking at the issues for them. Mm. So I think it was an excellent episode.
You know what is another new content vertical that talks all about these issues that stars our crush, Sana?
Oh, I know what it's
welcome
about.
To the show.
Yeah, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Super. Did you like that segue?
You did so well. I was like, wait, what is she talking about? And then I was like, Patriot.
Yeah. Sana, I'm just going to plug you quickly. If you subscribe to Sana's email list, she will...
I can't believe you found that.
I'm always looking for recommendations. Fair. She will send you, or you can go into an old newsletter that is chock full of great recommendations.
Yeah, so. I mean, I didn't know that I was an Uber recommender until you told me.
You are.
But I think a friend of mine says this all the time, that I really like to connect people to other people. That's my favorite game of like, you should meet this person, you should meet this person. So when you sent me free onto a newsletter, you really give me rein to be like, all of you should meet everybody, which is pretty great.
Okay, yeah. So I know you guys have this recommendation you want to talk about. I haven't seen it yet.
Well, we're going to talk about it, so you'll know. Okay. I know you're on Netflix, Amanda.
Oh, of course I am.
Well, I didn't watch... Well, okay, so the recommendation we're talking about, we should probably say...
Yeah, we'll back up all the way up.
...is Patriot Act by Hasan Minhaj. But I didn't watch The Daily Show.
So Neither did I.
Oh, you didn't?
Not really. Only clips where he was on it.
You were so bad.
Trying to be chill.
I mean, I'm very gay, but I have no chill with Hasan Minhaj. I can't. It's like all my dreams coming true in one man.
For folks that also have not watched The Daily Show or follow stand-up comedy or have seen his episode on Hot Ones, which is one of the best episodes of Hot Ones, and he also eats all of the wings, all
what?
10 wings.
Kim giving a Hot Ones recommendation?
I've talked about this on episodes of this show where you've been out of town, so you clearly missed this.
My mind is blown right now.
I've talked about this. Hasan Minhaj, stand-up comic, great writer, TV correspondent, now TV show host on Netflix, rather, new late-night talk show commentary.
It's not even a late-night talk show because it comes on at like 7 in the morning on Sunday. And then his Instagram is like him and his baby eating apples and watching it. That's and then I'm like, my ovary and my heart exploding.
I need to look this up later.
Yeah. His Insta stories are gold.
Okay. Hmm. Baby eating apples watching. Yeah. Okay. Great. But it's really good. There's been 3 episodes so far. They tackle one issue per episode. Each episode is maybe 20 minutes long.
And he did a really good explanation of what it is, which is like it's PowerPoint presentation meets TED Talk meets stand-up comedy meets like dorky Indian dude at the spelling bee, like all at once.
Multiplied by a Drake concert because there's a bunch of screens behind him, which is a line that he says specifically in a promo video that Netflix made with him and Tan France from Queer Eye.
Oh, that was like internet gold.
Where Tan from Queer Eye dresses Hasan.
Is Hasan tall? I picture him being really tall and I picture Tan being really little. So I really need to watch
actually,
this.
It's pretty cute. In the video, they didn't seem like... They're both just so beautiful that you're very distracted by that. And then they're talking about suits and shirts.
They both
and
have very tall hair. Tall hair. Like very sculpted.
Okay.
They have an easy 4 inches on the hair for sure.
This recommendation is like so far reaching. I know. There's so many facets. And
well, I think that Tan on Queer Eye was already like a very powerful character, right? Where not only did he give people recommend... I mean, Tan Queer Eyes everybody, but not in the way that the rest of them queer eye everybody. Like, he does his bit of the clothing, but then he also gets your heart. Like, he'll also, like, find the way to really get you. Yeah. Like, was there a Middle Eastern dude or an Indian dude?
There was.
The Middle Eastern dude, right? Who, like, dropped out of college. Remember that on Queer Eye?
Yes.
And then
There was an Indian guy who was going through depression, and then there was an Iranian guy who dropped out of college.
And Tan like empathizes with all of them. Like that is Tan's target audience. So then to pair him with Hasan with Tan was just it was too
much. It's very funny. It's very funny. And Tan doesn't know what a fuckboy is, so it has to be explained.
that's clearly a setup. I mean
it was all
on.
A setup. They were clearly like running lines.
Yeah, but the one-liners in this, it's probably the best 7 minutes of promo TV that I have seen. Yeah. I would happily watch that in the seat back of a plane repeatedly.
If it had been 40 minutes of that, I would have watched it.
By the way, shout out to Heritage. We can say fuckboy.
Yes.
You can't swear on other
shows? I don't know.
Yes, you know.
Can you not swear on other radio shows?
I don't think so.
Like, serious?
Oh. Yeah, I actually have an interview coming up for a thing where they said, please don't swear, we'll take you off the air.
Oh, wow. Okay. Like,
we keep you on the air here.
I feel like that's good to know. Yeah. Fuckboy is definitely like a character archetype, though. It's not like...
And you actually spell it with F-U-C-C-B-O-I.
Right.
So there isn't a swear word involved, you know.
Conceptually.
Yeah.
Patriot Act is great. He talks about affirmative action. He talks about Saudi Arabia.
He lays it in with all of these things, though.
Amazon. This last
that
episode.
Was really heart-wrenching, though, for me, where I was like, business is so hard. Should I kind of explain?
Yeah, explain. Yeah. We'd love to talk about what you talked about in your letter,
your
newsletter.
As a company, DiasporCo is just trying to scale up, like go from this very squeaky clean, beautiful, but also small business and become kind of a mid-level food business that can support many more people. And as we do that, the easiest way to access more people was like, well, Amazon.
Right. Could you back up for one quick second and just kind of talk about what Diaspora Co. is in your own words?
Yeah. Basically, I was seeing that in the food movement in the U.S., there was a lot of transparency and farm-to-table was kind of becoming a very everyday word. Organic was everywhere. Like, all the buzzwords were happening. Mm-hmm. But when it came to the ethnic food aisle, well, the first fact is it's still called the ethnic food aisle. There was complete ignorance. And this is in 2016, where I was asking people, you know, what, where are spices coming from? I know that they're grown in India, but, you know, you seem to know the farmer who picked your peach. So who picked your turmeric? And I would just get people kind of looking at me like, it's made in India. And I had a few chefs even go as far to say like, oh, but they're so poor in India that everything's organic, right? And I was like, no, we have the largest pesticide runoff in the world. Like, which generation are you talking about? So essentially, born out of all of that, we have started, it's a direct trade, single varietal spice company. And what that means is the same way there's now jam companies that will only use one kind of strawberry for their jam, and they are so much more delicious as a result, we will use one kind of turmeric for our turmeric powder, one kind of cinnamon. And currently, we just have turmeric. So we started for the past year and a half with turmeric, and spoiler is that next year we're adding on lots more spices.
Wow. Congrats.
Yeah. Thank you.
So Amazon, that was a tough decision for you to make, and you've written about that.
Yeah.
A little bit on your newsletter and on
your
website.
Well, the whole business for us is so, has been so, or at least for me, has been so political. It was like, we're going to create a business that doesn't exist, and we're going to take up space that previously we haven't been given. And so to be on Amazon, which is kind of the big white guy in the room.
Literally, because Bezos is Jack now.
You were telling me.
As we discussed. That's scary. Right.
That's so, really worrying.
Yeah. So it was, you kind of like presented both sides really eloquently in what I read, which was that like, yes, it's better for us as a business for you to buy directly the turmeric directly from Diaspora. But if you buy it from Amazon, you can also write a review and we also become more prominent and more people will learn about it. So like each one has its advantages and disadvantages.
So I think that was my simplistic point of view. I love that you said it was eloquent because to me it was like, I mean, my feelings.
It made it really clear for people to understand
why we took the decision that we did.
And why and how much thought you put into it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, Hasan Minhaj, our man, lays it out in Patriot Act and like goes,
Hasan Bhai.
Hasan Bhai, exactly.
Should we invite Hasan Bhai to the show?
Well, my best friend.
I just
friend
tagged
him
on our Insta stories, Amanda. I'm not sorry.
Yes. Hasan loves pizza. You know, Hasan, we record this show at Roberta's.
Off chance that you're listening to the
pizza
show.
Pizza on us.
Well, I was going to say, my best friend goes to the same mosque as him.
Okay.
And so I basically think we're best friends. Like, eventually we will interact. But anyway, he really lays out in Patriot Act, I think, how Amazon's actual selling of consumer goods is a very small part of their monopoly. And it's actually about Amazon Web Services, which is that they literally own large chunks of the internet, or a majority of the internet, like state websites and government websites are now hosted on Amazon platforms or something sciencey like that. And also the scary bit that Hasan Bhai mentioned was that often they will see a product getting popular on their site, and a small retailer will go onto the site. It'll be a really great product. It'll get popular. It'll start selling a bunch. The retailer will make money for maybe 3 months, and then Amazon will undercut them and go straight to their manufacturer or create the same product with the same language. And suddenly the retailer goes out of business. And that this has been something that's happened across the board. And after I watched the show, I like very nervously started Googling this and realizing how frequently that actually happens. So they're offering, I mean, they're baiting you and saying, if you want access to the customers, you have to be here. But then you're also what they want, right? You're also, it's kind of like eating your own dog food or something. Did I get in too deep?
No.
Oh, I'm just, okay.
Just there's a couple things I was thinking about.
I'm visualizing the dog food.
Yeah. So now I'm just at this point of, you know, is it really worth it? Like, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about it a little more simplistically, like when it comes to books. Like, I feel like I'm excited for people to have, you know, books in their hand. And some of the books, you know, that we talk about, I feel like are really important and present, you know, maybe points of view that haven't been heard before. But also, like, I want to support small independent booksellers. So it's, yeah, you know, kind of like, I mean, the end is people having the books in their hand. The means is then, you know, up for debate a little bit, yeah, about what ends up being best.
Totally.
Not baby always steps. The same we'll answer. Yeah. Totally.
And this stuff's complicated.
Yeah. Well, we have to take a quick break. And if you are able to head over to heritageradionetwork.org and support Heritage Radio, which is a member-supported nonprofit radio station. That is awesome. And when you're there, definitely check out our winter fundraiser, Winter in the Garden. It is a good time. It's on December 3rd. It's at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden. So again, head to heritageradionetwork.org and do what you can.
That's awesome.
Today's program was brought to you by Le Creuset, the first to pioneer colorful enameled cookware over 90 years ago. They've been a favorite for generations through the meals and memories the cookware creates and the style it expresses. My name is Kat Johnson. I'm the communications director at Heritage Radio Network. When I'm not making food radio, I'm making food, and my favorite cookware is the 8-quart marine blue Dutch oven that never leaves my stovetop. Before we got our Le Creuset, the cookware we used most often was an antique Griswold cast iron pan. It didn't take long for me to realize how much I'd been missing enamel cast iron in my life. Le Creuset has the superior heat retention of cast iron, but paired with the unparalleled performance and ease of enamel. That means delicious food with easy cleanup. Head to lecreuset.com/HRN, that's LECREUSET.com/HRN, to see all the new products and amazing holiday gift deals. HRN listeners will get 20% off the new Le Creuset cookbook with the code HRN.
Put it on our bathtub.
Probably. Hey, welcome back. This is Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair. I'm Kimberly Chow.
And I am Amanda Dell.
We're the co-hosts of Recommended Reading, which is a show where we talk about what we are watching, reading, and listening to with our friends and our family throughout the food and the media worlds. We are on air today, live in studio with Sana Javeri Kadri, who is the founder and the chief feelings officer of Diaspora Co., which is a direct trade, single, varietal, turmeric importer, soon bringing you many more spices, has been around since 2016. They make delicious, some of the most fragrant turmeric I've ever experienced with super high curcumin content.
Look 5%.
And that's the good stuff. That's the stuff that makes you feel good, cuts back on inflammation.
You've really been memorizing my emails.
I spent a lot of time on your Instagram. So you should check them out also at Diaspora Co. And also diasporaco.com. So you can check out that gold, good. And also some other beautiful things that they have for sale. And I understand that you'll... you just launched a zine. Would love to hear more about that. And there's some other exciting projects in the works.
Yeah. I can start with talking a little bit about the zine. I think when I launched the company with turmeric, I was thinking that maybe like 15 chefs would buy it for their restaurants. And that would be it. And I would continue doing my work as a photographer. Yeah. And me and this farmer would kind of become friends. And that would be it. And then on the first day, we had, I think it was like 60 orders.
That's amazing.
Wow. And I was just like, who are those people? I have no idea. It was people from Idaho. Uh-huh. Where I was like, how did you find me?
What was your launch? Like, was it via Instagram or via, how did you get the word out?
Is what I would call it. Okay. Like, one day I was like, we're open for pre-orders. At that point, we didn't have packaging. I didn't know how to fulfill an order. I didn't know like how shipping worked. It was literally like, I have some turmeric. You want some turmeric? And then Julia Tertian, who is like the fairy godmother of the POSA food world in a lot of ways. she's fantastic. She put us onto the New York Magazine Giving Tuesday gift guide. And I got, I think, almost like $7,000 worth of orders in one day.
Oh, damn.
In one day.
In one day. And wow. I was just like, oh my God, oh my God. I remember like being in my basement in my underwear being like, oh God, what am I going to do?
Did you have enough product?
I had enough product, but I didn't have it packed.
Right, right.
I didn't know how to get it from like my house to Alaska or my house to Idaho. So there was a lot of stuff, but I went on a tangent. I was trying to tell you about the zine.
For context. So fast forward 2 years.
Almost 2 years, yeah. Very sleepless 2 years. And people, every time we went to an event or a trade show or like anything, people come like, oh yeah, turmeric, so hip right now. What do I do with it? And a lot of people, I think because I'm Indian and because I grew up in India, obviously I should be able to supply them with those answers. But, and I mentioned this in the zine, we were talking about this, that for me, turmeric and all the other spices that go into an Indian or West Indian masala dabba, which is just a spice box, were kind of invisible. Like, if you're having veggies, doop, 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 like, you put in a little bit of each one, and then you have a veggie. You're making biryani, you add it to that. Like, there wasn't this concept of, like, turmeric rice or turmeric lentils. It was like, mm-hmm. if you're making lentils and there isn't turmeric in it, it's not going to taste right. Mm-hmm. So I didn't feel like I could come up with turmeric recipes. It was more like, well, do you want all the recipes I grew up eating? Because that's a lot. Or do you want like very simple Indian home-cooked food? Mm-hmm. Because then I can tell you. Mm-hmm. And so for a while I considered, you know, should I give the people what they want? Should I give them a turmeric latte? And then I was just like, no, I'm going to give them like simply prepared okra and millennial face gunk, which is how you came to know me.
That's how we came to know each other, folks. I first met Sana on Instagram. I think mostly the thing that I found most arresting, there was a post and there was an image of millennial face gunk, which is a combination of olive oil, turmeric,
we've actually changed it now from olive oil to hemp oil.
Okay.
I got very Californian on it.
Okay. I need to know more about this change, formulation change, and then also masa. Mm-hmm. And it was inspired by our mutual friends behind
Norma and Saki.
Yeah. Masala y Maiz.
Exactly.
Which is a beautiful restaurant in Mexico City.
So I grew up using honey as my face wash, always. It was like pear soap for your body. Is it called pears? That's how you pronounce
soap,
it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
At least I think so.
I think so too. But like some people, I don't know. With American words, you never know.
And pears
soap.
Or maybe it's pears. I don't know.
Pears soap? I don't
it's
know.
It's like a very simple, almost translucent brown bar.
It's okay. Like the name is like engraved into the soap.
How soap.
Okay.
In the same way Dove is.
Gotcha. It was just like a very simple soap that was available in India. It was that for your body and honey for your face. And then if you were going to like a wedding or a celebration, you added chickpea flour and turmeric to that mixture and you scrubbed it all over your body. So you were kind of on it with your body scrubbing. but I later learned that the chickpea flour was used because it's meant to be a skin lightener and a skin whitener. Mm. And I was just like, no, that's got to go.
Decolonize the body scrub.
And then Norma of Masala y Maiz introduced me to using masa and olive oil as a face scrub, and it was beautiful. So we were like, well, why don't we just put it all together? And we did.
It also smells like delicious cornbread mix.
You kind of want to eat it, right?
Yeah.
I've tried a few times. It's disgusting.
It's pretty gritty.
But it smells like, I wonder if we baked it, what would happen?
I think that would be good.
Samples at a trade show.
You're like, here's a recipe. This is what you asked for.
Right. I loved when you talked about how like people kept asking you for quote unquote recipes with turmeric. And you're like, well, that's not really exactly my experience. Like, you know, you just said it was just a part of your pantry, part of your everyday life growing up, and you never would think about it as an ingredient that would have like a recipe dedicated to it.
Right. Well, recently this journalist like called me and was like, I'm writing a piece on Ayurveda. What can you tell me about Ayurveda?
Ayurveda.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't know. Just because I'm Indian, I'm not going to know. And I actually advertised myself as somebody who doesn't know anything about Ayurveda. But then we started talking more, and this was a white woman, but the more she told me about what she considered Ayurveda, I was like, oh yeah, I grew up with that. Oh yeah, I did that. So like, there are things that we just grew up doing. That's like, if you're sick, you do this, this, and this. If your tongue hurts, you do this, this, and this. If you have a tummy ache. So, and I didn't consider those things like part of this like holistic school of nourishment and wellness. It was just like, this is what you do. So I think in America, a lot of these things get translated into like commodity words. Mm. And then it's very hard to for people off that culture to even, I mean, let alone belong to that world, but even understand how to belong to that world. I mean, I would love to kind of have a say on how Ayurveda is represented in the country, but I don't understand half the words they use.
I guess here's a good way to ask this question that I've been thinking about then is, for someone whose work and identity and business has to do with stuff that is connected to ancestral culture and cuisines that is now being commodified in a certain way, how do you leverage people's interest, but also feel authentic to yourself, not feel weird about it, but feel empowered and then make money and support other people?
A really nasty person recently was like, well, your job is like really to give turmeric the stamp of authenticity and like keep it cool and relevant. And I was just like, that makes me sound like, you know, an influencer in a club, or kind of like the hype lady. Mm-hmm. And often, you know, people, influencers reach out to me and are like, ooh, what if I did like a turmeric oatmeal? Would you post it? And then I have to kind of sit with like, if I posted it, it would get lots of likes. People probably buy turmeric, but also, is that what we're talking about as a business? Or where's that line between like, just share all the turmeric content and, but also hold true to the fact that we're a company based in agriculture mm-hmm. and food justice. Mm-hmm. I have absolutely no idea. I like take judgment calls on the daily. So far it's just been me full time, so I can make these calls and just walk away. Mm-hmm. Now we have two other full time folks who kind of look at me and are like, you really gonna do that? So I think now we're coming together with like a shared sense of, mm-hmm. what do we collectively think is okay? Mm-hmm. There's this company, this is a tangent, but I think we're fans of tangents.
Definitely.
There's a design company in London that I just visited, and they're called Teapoy. And they are an Indian design company, but they're in London. And they work with factories and manufacturing in India, but very tastefully and beautifully. Mm-hmm. And what they're trying to do is, I guess, champion for Indian industrial design. And they've created this thing called the Teapoy test, mm-hmm. where I don't know how much Spandana wants me to spill about the Teapoy test, but I'll give spoilers. Basically what they're doing is any idea you have, like supposing they're sitting in their studio and they're like, ooh, what if we made, you know, Indian inspired tumblers? And then tumblers are an English word.
The what you put whiskey in?
It's like a
glass?
No, it's like a little thing that you fill with water to water your plants, kind of. It's kind of a watering can.
Okay.
Yeah, that thing. So then she has to take the idea through the Teapoy test. Mm. Like, does it fulfill this criteria? Does it fulfill this criteria? And one of the main criteria she talked about is she doesn't want it to be rooted in nostalgia.
Ooh.
Like, if you're going to be an Indian design company that is moving forward, mm-hmm. your designs can't be like leveraging the Indian aesthetic of nostalgia. Mm. And I found that such a strong thing to say and stand by, because I think the Indian identity at large right now is so much about diaspora, mm-hmm. and in being in diaspora about nostalgia, mm-hmm. like banana leaves and marigolds and like,
yeah.
you know, all that. And I saw that and I recognized that despite the fact that I grew up in Mumbai and despite the fact that I go back there 3 times a year, my whole family's there, what I bring to America with me is my nostalgia about India and mm-hmm. what I miss about it. Mm-hmm. I don't So what would I have a way of talking about India and agriculture and the company without that nostalgia? I don't know.
Mm.
So that's my current existential crisis that our design company like spun us into. But they create beautiful work out of that test. Mm-hmm. So I think we can too.
For folks that want to check them out, how do we find them?
It's TIIPOI. Mm-hmm. And you can just Google that and discover their stuff. They have a great online store that you can spend too much money on.
That sounds dope.
Yeah,
that
I expense awesome. Some stuff.
I'm really curious about kind of what was like the pivotal moment in your mind where you were like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to launch Diaspora Co. Like, I'm going to, you know, you kind of talked about saying like how the word trickled out that you were ready to ship. But what was the moment where you said like, I'm all in? What were the factors that contributed to that?
I don't think I was old enough, still am not, to be all in.
Okay.
I think I've always been a person who like will start in middle school. I always got the consistent effort award. I never got the academic excellence award. I was the kid who like tried and tried, and it was like a little pathetic how much I tried. But I was never excellent. I think my approach to Diaspora was very much that. I was like, I just want to keep trying. But I think in terms of that pivotal moment, when you're an Indian kid who was sent to America to get an education and you quit your seemingly very cushy job and move back in with your parents at 24, you got to pick something you're going to do. Like, there was this deep pressure of like, I have to find a purpose. There has to be a thing. I don't necessarily think that I knew that that would be turmeric.
Mm.
I really thought that the turmeric story was either going to be an art project or a photojournalistic like adventure. Like, I thought I was going to visit these farms, take beautiful photos, understand the whole thing, and then pitch it to Roads and Kingdoms or something. Or that it was going to be this like dystopian art project where I brought this turmeric. I like had this pop-up experience about like the new commodities or the new spice trade, da, 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 da. And it was like informed by like art in 2018 and performance and social practice. I did not necessarily think it was going to become like a for-profit business venture. But eventually that model kind of just presented itself of like, I remember actually making a spider chart. I think that was the moment. I made this chart. I was like, me. And I made all of the things that I like to do. Like, I really like to connect with people. I really like to photograph. I really like to somehow find ways to uplift women of color. I want to work in agriculture in some way. There was all of these things. And my parents were looking at it with me being like, pick one.
Oh, this was like a family.
Everything in my life is a family thing. My parents and I do most things together.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
We're very conjoined like that. My dad and I have weekly Skype meetings like about business, where I just like tell him what I'm struggling with and he gives me advice. Anyway, tangent.
No, I'm just picturing that.
Right, it's now. Very sweet. I think it's like helped me have a really wonderful relationship with him at a time when I didn't have much of a relationship with him, because they understand business. How do you explain food photography
right.
to your like Indian architect professional parents where they're like, you're doing what? But all that to say, the more I thought about this company and all that it could be, it like completely encompassed my mind map spider chart where I was like, I want to have like a blog. Cool. We can do that with Diaspora. I want to pay like women of color artists. Cool. We can do that with Diaspora. Like everything seemed to be possible to do with Diaspora. And so far that's been true. I don't make any money, but all my friends do. So yeah.
So then you were on your way.
And so then, yeah, we started the thing. I think, but maybe 7 months ago, which is quite recently, is when I was like, oh, okay, this is a thing. Like, this is a fully fledged business. I have to figure out how to scale it. I have to figure out, you know, how it's all going to work. When I look back at my business plan from 2 years ago, it was the Microsoft Word pie chart where I had like been like, I think that's how much this will cost and this will cost, which means that our profit margin should be 70%. And now it's like our profit margin is like there. I can't say enough that I didn't know what I was doing, but I, all through for the past 2 years, my tactic has always been to email intelligent women who are much smarter than me, and almost always they respond and donate their time to me or are very generous with information. I've sent those same emails to men and gotten no responses, or actually gotten people who steal ideas or undercut me or just kind of don't take me seriously, which I understand. And it's constantly been women who are like, actually here, like, just have my lawyer's document, or like, here's what a line sheet is. You should probably know. And now we heal.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you too. I am really grateful to know you and admire how you hold space for the evolution of your process in business, as well as how you talk about it. And I remember, and I subscribe to your newsletter on Instagram. I read everything that you write as well. And I remember at the beginning, there was a lot of, and I feel like 2016 was a particularly peak wellness year, even though I think we've sort of gone beyond that.
We're in the wellness apocalypse,
like,
now.
Or peak wellness apocalypse. So if 2016 was peak wellness, 2018 is wellness apocalypse. And in during peak wellness, one of the things you would say would be like, I see you always, Goop. About the commodification of turmeric and
wellness at large.
And Ayurveda and Chinese medicine. And just wanted to ask you about your relationship with that and if your thoughts on that have changed now that we've reached the end times.
Yeah. I think I told you about this. But we now know that Goop consumes our turmeric.
Oh.
Oh, I didn't tell you. Oh.
You mean the offices or no, Gwyneth like Paltrow?
Our homegirl, Gwyneth. Should I give some context about the Goop? Yeah. So, in so many ways, Goop and that enterprise of wellness kicked the turmeric poked the bear, that word. And I had a lot of rage towards this woman. And then about a year ago, I found out that a turmeric latte vendor that we wholesale to is the turmeric latte that she consumes every day. And initially I was like, oh no, like, have I become everything I detest? But then I thought about it more, and like I said, I started it as a dystopian art project. And so if the dystopian art project has now reached the wellness bear, it has actually succeeded. If every single person consuming a turmeric latte was consuming the like most ethically sourced, like, food justice-y turmeric out there, then great, then we're good. So now I find grocery stores very stressful now, because I walk through them and I see all the turmeric things, and I have the instinct to write it all down, to send them all emails and be like, you know, if you want to not be caught saying that you're appropriative and terrible, you should probably switch to our turmeric. It's also the best stuff out there. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, okay. I think you're right that it's all in process, and that if we stuck to one mission and vision, this business would have like wrapped up a few months ago. And I would have been like, cool, I'm going to go like work at Good Eggs now or something.
I can't really picture that.
No.
But I imagine like in their bags, there would be like still stray turmeric. Well, speaking of process and journey, what is next? Can you hype anything that's coming up?
I can hype things.
People, this is a great chance to get Christmas gifts.
We have some very exciting press coming out that I can't hype, like I can't detail, but between now and March, the world at large is going to learn a lot about me, a lot about my family's recipes. There's just a lot of things coming out, but the hype that I can talk about is that I just got back from India a week ago, and I was there for a month, and I visited a lot of farms. And as a company, we partner with the Indian Institute of Spice Research. So they are kind of our scientific and agricultural partners on the science end of things.
It was so funny. I was laughing out loud when I was reading on your website about, like, I tried emailing them, I tried calling them, no one responded, but then I got on a plane to India, and like, one of the doctors of the institute was just like waiting for you. Like, he was waiting for you forever. Like, thank you for coming. You're here.
So I thought that, like, now that I've had this established business relationship with them, my second visit would be better. Where, like, I now have their personal cell phone numbers. They should respond to me. But we actually went through the exact same thing so 2 weeks ago where he didn't respond to my emails or WhatsApps. And so I just booked a flight.
Right. Okay.
And I showed up in his office and he was like, oh, you. Okay. And it was really wonderful because they had like, what did you call it? A vitrine, like a glass box with our turmeric, like our tin and our jar at the reception. So right then I was like, ooh, something has changed here.
You're moving on up.
And they know me as the American success story.
Wow.
And I was like, oh. Me and Hassan Bhai, both of us. but basically, we're going to continue to work in collaboration with them. And the spices that they've been working on are pepper, cardamom, and cinnamon. And so that's what we'll be bringing on board.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're about to upgrade big time. And I am terrified.
Upgrade you. It's so exciting. Congratulations.
Thank
you. It's a lot of work.
We can't wait. When can we pre-order? I think this time you'll know it's coming.
Probably in the spring of 2019.
Okay,
like awesome. March, April-ish is when it's all going to drop. Yeah.
Cool.
Well, sadly, we have to wrap up.
That's okay. This was wonderful. Thank you.
Quickly let our many, many, many listeners out there, thank you, listeners, know where they can find you on Instagram, your website.
Yeah, all that we jazz. Are diasporaco.com, which is diasporaco.com. And then diasporaco on Instagram. We're good at Instagram, I think. Our website gets a little stale, but then everybody's website gets a little stale.
I enjoyed it.
Thanks.
You can also, once you sign up for the mailing list, you'll get these delightful recommendations in the newsletter and other news.
We send Fall of the Patriarchy reading lists, which we're very proud of. So
that we can definitely recommend as reading.
Without a doubt. This has been an amazing show full of recommendations and so much more. Thank you, Sana.
Thank you.
And get your Diaspora Co. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. This is Recommended Reading with Food Book Fair. We'll Bye-bye. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please, join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.